Former President George W. Bush compares Trump supporters to 9/11 terrorists. A Washington State high school cancels its 9/11 tribute because it could be seen as insensitive. Plus, the attacks on Larry Elder in the California recall election continue. All that and more. I'm Bobby Eberle. This is a 13-Minute News Hour.
And God bless the United States of America.
Okay, friends, welcome to the show. Happy Monday. I hope you had a great weekend. If you're new to the show, thank you so much for tuning in. We're going to start with former President George W. Bush, because I must say that I am incredibly disappointed in him and his speech that he gave this past Saturday to commemorate the 20th anniversary of the September 11th attacks and to honor those heroes aboard United Airlines Flight 93. Let's think about this for a moment. Bush was president at the time, so it seems fitting, it seems appropriate that he would give a speech marking 20 years since that fateful day. I get that. He should give a speech. And some portions of the speech were quite good. This part really stood out to me in particular.
20 years ago, terrorists chose a random group of Americans on a routine flight to be collateral damage in a spectacular act of terror. The 33 passengers and 7 crew of Flight 93 could have been any group of citizens selected by fate. In a sense, they stood in for us all.
I just love that. Basically, what that means to me is that in challenging situations, when it seems like all hope is lost, if you take a handful of random Americans, you have something special, something mighty, something heroic. A random group of Americans is capable of sending a message to terrorists that you messed with the wrong country. Here's more.
The terrorists soon discovered that a random group of Americans is an exceptional group of people facing an impossible circumstance. They comforted their loved ones by phone, braced each other for action, and defeated the designs of evil. These Americans were brave, strong, and united in ways that shocked the terrorists, but should not surprise any of us.
A random group of Americans is an exceptional group of people. Just awesome. And as I mentioned earlier, the purpose of this speech was to commemorate the 20-year mark of the attacks and to honor the heroes of Flight 93. The clips that I played you were near the very end of the speech. Closer to the beginning, Bush had a passage that I can't let pass without comment and without outrage. It seems like neither the Democrats nor establishment Republicans will miss any opportunity to bash former President Trump and Trump's supporters. That's a given, and George W. Bush and the entire Bush family certainly fall into that category. But what the former president said on Saturday is just beyond offensive. Here's Bush.
And we have seen growing evidence that the dangers to our country can come not only across borders, but from violence that gathers within. There is little cultural overlap between violent extremists abroad and violent extremists at home. But in their disdain for pluralism, in their disregard for human life, in their determination to defile national symbols, they are children of the same foul spirit. And it is our continuing duty to confront them.
This is just so shocking and massively inappropriate for a 9/11 speech. We are supposed to come together as Americans and remember those who have fallen. And Bush takes this solemn day to talk about violence within. And here's the deal. He's not talking about BLM or Antifa. No one calls out those groups. When he talks about people who want to defile national symbols, he's talking about Trump supporters in the January 6th riots. There is no comparison, none, between the events of 9/11, 2001, and January 6th. Bush says the two groups are children of the same foul spirit. He also says they share a disregard for human life. Are you kidding me? This is just beyond offensive. One was a group of terrorists who killed thousands. The other was a group of Trump supporters who killed no one, none, zero. The only person killed by an act from another person was a Trump supporter. How dare Bush compare Al-Qaeda terrorists to Trump supporters. As I said, this sentiment has no business in that speech on that day. We know the Bushes are anti-Trumpers. That's fine. Everyone is entitled to an opinion. But that comparison and the venue are just shocking for both their lack of accuracy and the lack of decorum. Now, the reaction online was just incredible. Retired Colonel Rob Manis, he tweeted this. I have personally overlooked many things from former President George W. Bush, but his comparison between Trump voters and the jihadists from 9/11 is an absolute disgrace. Unbelievable. Hashtag never forget. And then there was this tweet from columnist and comedian Tim Young. The more I hear from George W. Bush, the more I realize there was never really a choice in presidential elections in my lifetime until 2016. That comment is just so on the mark. So what do you think? Am I off base? Was Bush talking about Antifa and BLM? Should that section of the speech have been included at all? I want to know what you think, so let me know in the comments. All right, so next let's talk about the school that canceled its 9/11 tribute. But first, if you're new to the show or haven't subscribed yet, regardless of platform, just search out my name, hit that subscribe button, make sure notifications are turned on. That way you can follow the show and help us grow. So next is Eastlake High School in Sammamish, Washington, just outside of Seattle. The students had planned to incorporate a 9/11 tribute into their Friday football game by wearing red, white, and blue. Considering that is a common way of showing patriotism and that the colors of America are red, white, and blue, there's nothing outrageous going on here. Following the attacks of 9/11-2001, students at my old school, Texas A&M University, wore red, white, and blue to the next home game. You can see the picture here. 20 years later, with many of the students not even having been born at the time of the attacks, they recreated that moment two Saturdays ago. But that's my alma mater. In Washington State, the high school's red, white, and blue tribute was canceled because administrators said it could be offensive. And here's the story. Students at a Washington State high school wanted to mark the 20th year since the September 11th attacks by wearing red, white, and blue at a Patriots Day-themed game, but were refused because the event could unintentionally cause offense to some who see it differently, according to a report. Jason Rantz, a host at KTTH 770 and 94.5 FM, reported that the event was canceled by an unnamed staffer at Eastlake High School in Sammamish at the last minute. A student told the show that he was informed that the red, white, and blue was going to be seen as racially insensitive and may affect people in a way that we will not understand, and for that reason, that we were to change our theme. Can you believe this? A tribute to 9/11 is canceled because red, white, and blue might be racially insensitive. The colors represent America, and we are in America. Who is offended by that? Here's more of the story from reporter Jason Rantz. Neither Principal Chris Beattie nor District Communications Director Shannon Parthmore explained who would take offense, and why is wearing red, white, and blue offensive to begin with? No one would say. I was instantly upset and frustrated, one student emailed. If Eastlake is all about including everyone's beliefs and being together as a family, then why are we being told we can't represent the country we live in? I have seen other Lake Washington School District football teams that held a flag or did some sort of memorial recognition toward 9/11. But apparently, we weren't allowed to even wear USA colors. This is the United States of America. I say, love it or leave it. And once again, we see an example of the woke left that claims to be inclusive and tolerant and shows that they are neither. Under the claim of not wanting to offend anyone, they end up offending almost everyone. The kids wanted to pay tribute to those lost on 9/11. That kind of sentiment should be cherished and rewarded, not punished. All right, so next, we're going to talk about the election to recall California Governor Gavin Newsom. It's tomorrow, and those on the radical left are doing everything they can to make sure this terrible governor stays in power. Their latest tactic is to attack the GOP frontrunner with claims that he's racist. Imagine that. But that frontrunner is conservative talk show host Larry Elder, who's black. That's right. Those on the left are claiming that Elder is a black white supremacist. On Sunday, the Los Angeles Times columnist Gene Guerrero was on CNN's Reliable Sources, which is hosted by Brian Stelter. This is one of the worst programs on television, and the fact that it claims to be a media watchdog is just insulting to anyone with a brain. Here's Stelter with a little lead-in before he gets to Guerrero.
But then he has sparred with the media that's been covering the campaign. He's clearly the leading contender among the Republicans in this recall. So do you think he was able to get around the media and reach voters in California? Was he able to run a Trump playbook in the state?
Of course Elder sparred with the media. They have called him the blackface of white supremacy. How would you react to that claim? Here's Guerrero in response.
I mean, kind of. He's essentially been running his campaign on Fox News and on right-wing media outlets. He's refused to talk to large, you know, to nonpartisan and media outlets and to journalists who are critical of him. Has refused to answer difficult questions. Often uses the few interviews that he does give as an opportunity to give a performance on social media. Denouncing those journalists and playing the victim.
Don't you just love how whenever these far-left writers talk about the media, they always describe it as a difference between the right-wing media and, in this case, the nonpartisan media outlets? Yep, CNN, MSNBC, NPR, the legacy networks, they are all just unbiased, nonpartisan, and fair, according to the leftists who work there. Here's more from Guerrero.
But he has been able to reach the minority of voters in California who embrace his white supremacist worldview. He's co-opted this line by my fellow columnist from the headline, you know, calling him the blackface of white supremacy. But he refuses to engage with the actual substance of our reporting, you know, the idea that His views were shaped by a well-known white supremacist named Jared Taylor, who he repeatedly quoted in early writings, that he plans to reverse all of the state's progress on immigrant rights and racial justice, and that he poses a very real threat to communities of color for all of the reasons that we've reported in the past.
The left knows no shame. Can you imagine the outrage the left would express if a Republican went after a black candidate by calling him or her racist? Like saying that candidate was the blackface of white supremacy, they would have a meltdown. But this just shows that there are no rules when it comes to the radical left. The only thing that matters is winning. So the election is tomorrow, and if you're in California and haven't voted yet, please go vote and vote yes to recall Gavin Newsom. All right, so next let's talk about Democrat Senator Joe Manchin and Joe Biden's massive $3.5 trillion spending plan that is really just a who's who of left-wing policy items, such as the Green New Deal, which will do nothing except increase inflation, increase the debt and deficit, and kill jobs. Manchin has come out in opposition to the spending plan, which has drawn the ire of far-left radicals like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. AOC recently went on Twitter with her theory on why Manchin won't play ball with the radical left. Manchin has weekly huddles with Exxon and is one of many senators who gives lobbyists their pen to write so-called bipartisan fossil fuel bills. It's killing people, our people, at least 12 last night. Sick of this bipartisan corruption that masquerades as clear-eyed moderation. Yep, there's no room for moderates in AOC's world. You either get on board with the Green New Deal or you might as well be a Republican. Now, on Sunday, Manchin appeared on CNN's State of the Union and was asked about AOC's comments.
Is it true that you have weekly meetings
Absolutely
with Exxon
not.
And other
Absolutely
lobbyists
you
for
ask
fossil
them
fuel?
Ever, no, they don't. Weekly meetings, I don't.
It's just false.
I keep my door open for everybody. It's totally false. And those type of superlatives, it's just awful. Continue to divide, divide, divide. I don't know the young lady that well. I really don't. I've met her one time, I think, between sets here, but that's it. So we have not had any conversations. She's just speculating and saying things.
CNN's Dana Bash continued to press Manchin on the spending bill. Apparently, like the Democrats often do, they want to rush the bill through before anyone has a chance to actually read it, discuss it, or debate it. Manchin is not having any part of that either.
You have said pause. What the Senate wants to do is get this worked out by this week so that the House can vote on it. September 27th. Is that a timeline that you can support in any way?
There's no way we can get this done by by the 27th. If we do our job, there's so much differences that we have here, and so much, there's so much apart from us where we are as far as our, I'm giving you different things. I've been talking. I'm working with people. I'm willing to talk to people. It makes no sense at all.
So that's where things stand with Democrat Joe Manchin in the $3.5 trillion Biden spending spree. And what's really so frustrating is that because the Senate is now in a 50-50 tie, conservatives need to hope that Democrats like Manchin will provide a check to the radical left. That's not a great position to be in, considering we have the likes of Mitt Romney, Susan Collins, and other establishment Republicans who would likely vote for more spending if given the chance. Friends, that's our show for today. I hope you enjoyed it. And don't forget, if you're new to the show or haven't subscribed yet, regardless of platform, just search out my name, hit that subscribe button, make sure notifications are turned on. That way you can follow the show and help us grow. Thank you so much for tuning in. Our next show is going to be Wednesday evening at the usual time, 6:30 p.m. Central Time. Until then, I'm Bobby Eberle. This is the 13-Minute News Hour.